Welcome to Ad Exchanger Talks, the podcast devoted to examining the issues and trends in advertising and marketing technology that matter most to you.
This episode is supported by Acxiom. Marketers leverage our data to learn how their customers interact with other brands, helping them more accurately anticipate customers' needs and create timely, compelling, segment-tailored offers. To learn more, click the Acxiom banner on adexchanger.com/podcast and download our free ebook.
All right, welcome back, everybody. This is Zach Rogers. I'm the executive editor of AdExchanger and your host. And my guest in the studio is John Lee, the chief product and data officer at Merkle. Welcome, John.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. You know, back in the day, agencies didn't have chief product officers and they didn't have chief data officers. So you're kind of a modern creature since you do both. But I'm looking forward to talking about both those areas and how they play out at Merkle.
Yep.
Maybe we could start with a little discussion of, you know, the state of play at Merkle in the, what's it been, 6 or 8 months?
Yeah, not even.
Okay.
That deal closed in September.
I should say, since you were acquired.
Yeah, about 6 months, yeah.
Dentsu.
Yeah, thereabouts, yeah.
Okay, great. How's it going?
It's going great, yeah. Thanks for asking. You know, 6 months goes by in a blink. With something like this, but it's going really well. I mean, I think, you know, the first thing I tell people, you know, about our experience so far is, you know, what a great culture fit, you know, between the two management teams.
Yeah.
So I think that's really helped things. You know, a lot of alignment of vision, particularly around the role that data plays, and I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit more in the world of modern media. So I think that's, you know, that sort of sets the right tone. And it's a story that has sort of two plots, if you will. There's the one of Merkle, the agency brand that sits, you know, side by side proudly with the other big agency brands within the Dentsu portfolio, Kara, iProspect, 360i, you know, Visium and others. And Merkle now fits into that portfolio really well as both CRM agency and as digital media agency. And then you have the group that I have the pleasure of overseeing, which is the products and the data group at Merkle, which sort of sits in a different position within the network, less tied these days specifically to Merkle and more as the data and the connectivity power plant that serves all of the agencies. Merkle will always be, you know, have most favored nation, you know, status for a lot of obvious reasons.
Right.
You know, in terms of our ties and our, you know, our sort of kinship with that group. But, you know, the M1 group that is the product team and its fueling of real people data and deterministic data into the work that our sister agencies do is a really exciting part of the integration, and we're hard at work on both of those tracks right now, and I think it's going really, really well.
Okay, terrific. For the audience, M1 is, could you define it and describe kind of its parameters?
Sure, yeah. So M1 is the end-to-end people-based planning and activation platform that was born in Merkle as an independent agency entity, and now again sits as sort of a global platform for the network. So in simplest terms, think of it as M1 can ingest data, generally PII-based CRM data, if you will, from any source. And all we need is some form of identifier in that data, and we apply our universal ID to that. So the M1, that's where sort of the M1 platform picks up. We then have our third-party data product that then enriches whatever data we might be getting from the client with lots and lots of attributes that we've collected from the third-party marketplace. And again, I'm still talking about PII. I haven't touched cookies or device IDs or anything like that at that point. We then have the ability to plan on that platform, so to visualize that data, explore who that audience really is, and for a lot of our clients, you know, their knowledge of actually who that customer is a surprising thing. Oftentimes, as their data enters M1, And then we have lots of connections to the media ecosystem, right? Mm-hmm. So whether that is connection to set-top box data, you know, the Nielsen's or the Rentrax of the world, where we can then see where is this audience, how is this audience consuming things like television,
mm-hmm.
That we can use to plan against both addressable and linear and things like that. And then directly into the digital ecosystem, mainly in terms of looking for addressable connections, right? So whether that's some of our own publisher platforms or sort of private marketplaces that we've developed one-to-one with some of these big publishers, where we can do a two-way ID sync, you know, with mm-hmm. these guys, or whether it's with some of the big ecosystems like Facebook and Google that allow for that kind of matching,
mm-hmm.
But have some parameters around what, you know, kind of the trip back, you know, in terms of data.
Right.
And then, of course, into the world of programmatic and the world of cookies and device IDs, we translate those people, right, our client's audience into cookies so that we, in combination across all of those different ecosystems, we have a massive scale
mm-hmm.
Where we can both plan and then ultimately push and activate and track against real people. So the whole mantra of M1 is everything should be people-based. When I say people-based, it should be based on, in the U.S., everybody in the U.S., mm-hmm. every household, every individual at a known level, because why would you plan, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of media
right.
off a panel, right?
Yeah, right,
of, I don't know, you know, 40,000, 70,000 people
mm-hmm.
and build proxies and personas and, you know, all that sort of stuff that we've been, you know, we've all been doing for many years, when I can use the client's actual data, you know, people who bought pickup trucks, you know, last week or auto insurance or whatever it is, model that and segment it against every live breathing adult, mm-hmm. right, in the U.S. and use that as the basis of truth,
right,
to develop my investment strategies and ultimately to push and activate who wouldn't, you know, what's not to like, so
yeah,
to speak,
right.
in that equation. And so
okay.
easier said than done. So
right.
a lot of work, it has to go into a platform.
So you've got this very robust data platform and it's got, you know, tentacles running to many different sources of data and media. You mentioned also activation. So you're doing media execution within M1. Is that right? Or that's
yeah.
just something you can support?
Good question. So it depends on the media.
Okay.
So, you know, within digital, we have the ability to do a lot of forecasting, right? And so we actually have hooks into the execution platforms,
mm-hmm.
right? So just think of it in terms of the world of the sort of direct IO mm-hmm. Based media buying and activation as well as programmatic. M1 reaches into that world
mm-hmm.
And actually does some forecasting,
right? Mm-hmm.
So we actually know not just who is the audience that I can match against, but how often will I see them, right? With what frequency
okay.
and at what price point. But within the world of something like television, right, obviously in like the linear space, it's more of a push ultimately of those audiences.
Sure, of course.
Because they're just, you know, as you know, in the world of TV, that level of automation is very, very nascent. So
yeah, right.
I think it's a good question. So I'd say super strong around analytics and audience insights,
yeah.
right? Very comprehensive there. Very, very strong around the idea of audience sizing and matching, right, to the platforms, like how many of my customer lives in all these places. And then I'd say a partial step in the world of actual activation. So we are in just to be super clear, we're not building a DSP.
You're not a trading desk?
We're not a trading desk. That's a great one. I should anticipate that one. Yeah, we are not a trading desk. The Dentsu Aegis Network has a number of really fine options. Amnet.
Yep.
You know, which is the programmatic activation arm.
Dentsu trading desk.
Absolutely. And so we have a very strong integration to their platform,
mm-hmm.
ID-based integration to their platform. But if a client works with, you know, whomever,
mm-hmm.
Because that's the contract they've created.
Yeah.
It's interoperable, obviously. We move data from point to point.
And you guys were acquired almost at the same time as Accordant Media, which is
another
programmatic an independent trading desk is what they were.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have a more of a direct-to-client model. So, you know, that will continue to, I assume, exist under the Dentsu umbrella. So you have these an increasing number of data-driven media capabilities in-house at Dentsu.
Yep.
You guys are one of the most powerful at Merkle and with EdM1.
Yep.
And you said at the beginning, you're making M1 available across the Dentsu network of agencies. Mm-hmm. So how does that work? Any Dentsu or Isobar or any Dentsu agency can leverage M1, and how would they do so? Are they doing so today?
Yes. Well, first off, the answer is yes. Any of them, by definition, when Dentsu anoints something as a global platform, by definition, what that means is it's open to business to any of the agencies within the family, sort of open for business, and that's absolutely true of M1. It's very early days, so we are in the throes of the training, the communication, and sort of the change management process. Mm-hmm. For example, with Kara, that's where I came from. Mm-hmm. This morning, around how they will adopt and integrate M1 into their processes. Right, everybody doesn't just drop, right, how we've been doing media planning and buying for the last, however many years. It's complex. Dentsu or Kara, rather, has its own platforms, as you might imagine, right, that have been in place, its own data sets and so forth. So we're sifting through all of that. We're integrating the platforms, merging the platforms where it makes sense, and in some cases saying, hey, look, we don't need to use this anymore. We've got a better alternative. So early days there, right? We've got the first kind of clients rolling out on the platform right now. Of course, M1's been live with Merkle clients for not a super long time, but at least through the second half of last year.
Mm-hmm.
But we're getting the first Dan, the sort of the network clients.
Dentsu Aegis, yeah.
Dentsu Aegis Network for short. Getting those clients up and launched, but it will absolutely be open for everybody's utilization. Particularly, the focus will be media, paid media at the outset.
Right. Kara is a huge player, but they're known as a TV player, and they're more European. That's kind of their roots, and but there's some low hanging fruit for you there because they understand media. I wonder about the Japanese cohorts. Like, is there an opportunity for M1? In Tokyo, and how do you make that a reality?
Yeah, so the intent certainly is, and the interests of the network are global, right? There isn't a conversation we're in that's really just about one market or the other. So certainly our plan is to roll out market by market. Japan certainly is a hot topic, as are a number of the obvious. The obvious subjects, the UK, Australia, China is a very interesting marketplace, I'm sure you've covered. But there's sort of this, segmentation of the data landscape across these different markets. And there's certainly markets where obviously scale, right, and sophistication of the media market is a big factor, but also the conditions in that market around data availability and obviously the local regulations and permissions around that data. So we will look at each market individually. But getting back to your question, Japan certainly a sort of top opportunity for us.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
There's more we could talk about with Merkle, and we will. But I want to talk about some industry trends, and specifically because you focus on data and have a lot of pretty sophisticated thoughts on sort of data and the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. I'd like to talk about a few data-related topics. One would be the very idea of agencies having their own cross-device graph. I feel like this is something that's emerging now, and many agencies seem to have some IP or a native graph, if you will. I think for some people who observe the industry from the outside, they say, well, how did they get that? They must have gotten it from other sources because agencies don't have direct relationships with consumers the way publishers do or the way marketers do.
Yeah.
How does an agency that claims to have a proprietary data asset get that asset, and does it have legitimate rights to that asset?
Yeah. Well, I think it's the right question to be asking at this point in history, so to speak. I think without, getting into naming names, I think if you look across the big agency players, you see very different approaches, right? So you have some that are sort of big believers in the outsourcing or the rental, or I don't know, the leasing, I don't know what word to use, right, of identity.
Right.
Through partnering with, you know, sort of outside or kind of third party, you know, data and platform providers.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see other agency networks that are very focused on building everything in-house or building or acquiring,
right?
And doing everything in-house. And I think both of those approaches, I'm sure, have some merit, but I think both are very, very challenging. Mm-hmm. For obvious reasons. I think the rental of identity. Identity is not sort of a, what's the right analogy? I mean, it's not really a transient, you know what I mean, sort of thing that you can sort of look at the world through a certain identity lens and certain apparatus. Mm-hmm. And then decide tomorrow you're kind of sick of that one and you want to swap it out for another. It's just far, far more complex. So
right.
Being dependent on third-party independent, you know, partners who have their own interests, their own roadmaps, their own black boxes, I think is a challenging long-term strategy. It might be a good way to get started.
Mm.
And so I would challenge whether those players really have, you know what I mean?
So you have to be careful if you're aggregating identity data from vendors. That's kind of—
Yeah, I mean, you don't own that apparatus. You don't own the data. You're renting, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not actually handling, nor do you— can you control, mm-hmm. right, how that data is being handled. If you think about identity and how a match is made between an actual CRM record, a real person,
right,
a device ID, a bunch of impressions that were bought last week through, you know, through DCM.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a the kind of thing fifth grade sort of math takes care of, right? There's just sort of incredible amounts of mm-hmm. of complexity, a lot of choices mm-hmm. you have to make about, you know, how you're going to turn those dials. If you're sort of renting from a third party, you just really don't— truth is, you don't really know how that's being done, mm-hmm. and you have probably very little control over that.
Okay,
I think that's a dangerous long-term proposition. I think
would you include like a Facebook ID in that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think
Any third party
where you're bringing in data. It doesn't matter if it's cookies or, you know, or IDs or, you know, client CRM data sets. It's a very tricky business. Right?
You're never going to be able to take the black out of the box.
Not when it's not under your own roof.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just interests just aren't—
yeah.
They're never going to be 100% aligned. I mean, it's just not how the world works.
So
right?
What's the alternative?
Well, you know, I think you see others that are trying to have a lot of valuable pieces somewhere within their network,
mm-hmm.
but organizational boundaries make it very tough, and knowledge gaps. People who speak big media, you know, and people who speak CRM and, mm-hmm. and data, it's like, you know, Mars and Venus kind of thing. It sounds sort of trivial,
mm-hmm.
but you know, getting that language and getting people talking at each other versus past each other,
mm-hmm.
especially when P&Ls don't align, it's just enormously difficult thing to do. I think it can be done. It will take time. And I think, you know, for us, obviously, you know, I'm biased in the sense that I think that the marriage of a mature scaled entity like Merkle that brings products, you know, M1 as a sort of integrated platform is relatively new, but the underpinning components of it, we've had commercially viable for many, many years, you know, over a decade, really.
Okay.
And so that combination where all the interests can be aligned because of operating model with a big agency like Kara,
mm-hmm.
is a very good set of conditions for an agency to be able to talk to a chief marketing officer and look them straight in the face and say, hey, we own our own ID, if you want to use the words ID graph. You know, people use lots of different terms, but, you know, we own our own identity machine, right,
mm-hmm.
That we have complete control over on your behalf so that we can securely manage and ingest your data, right, and manage that data end to end, right, without it ever leaving our hands through the entire business process, right? From raw data to insights to a people-based media plan to activation, all under one roof, you know, we think that that's a very – it's just a tough thing to replicate.
Absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of hard work goes into it. I wonder how you charge – what's the right way to charge for that kind of investment that you've made in data? Because, you know, a marketer or client is not necessarily used to the idea of, oh, hey, I'm going to pay my agency a data licensing fee. What's the right way? Is it right to just bundle it with media the way the clients have always expected, or is there an emerging need to create a new way to charge for this kind of work?
Yeah, I think this is one of those just take a big step back and let common sense, you know, and prevail. So, you know, I think that if you go out to the world again of kind of third party onboarding and data type entities, you know, mm-hmm. that exist, you know, we all know who they are, you know, they're charging you for, and I think for good reasons, given their place in the value chain, they're charging you data for data's sake, right? Meaning they don't really know how you're going to use it. They don't really care. I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, it's just that's not their role.
Right.
And so they'll charge for things like number of records that are processed or number of data records that are matched to something. And that's sort of how they will charge for it. And you have the media agencies, obviously, they're charging now in a kind of compressed environment, right, mm-hmm. around percentage of media or FTEs and so forth. Neither of those models seem to make sense mm-hmm. To us around how we would charge for something like an M1. So how we've been doing it is let's charge the advertiser, the client, on an impression basis only for real people, right, who got the message, right? So impression served to real people that I can report back, you know, to the advertiser and prove that record that started in our master ID system, mm-hmm. right, that person got an impression. We'll charge on a volume basis for that. That way, debates about transparency and about like, well, was there like, did I really get value, right, for my money, or did I just get a bunch of data moving from point A to point B? In our view, those things go away, right, because it's you only paid when the people that we all agreed were your real customer, real people, got the experience or saw the advertisement that you paid to put in front of them. That's how our commercial system works.
Okay, terrific. Let's talk a little bit about publisher data. You know, the long story in programmatic is that publishers, agencies and buyers wish publishers would be a little more willing to part with their data rather than insisting it be bundled with their media. Mm-hmm. This is asking kind of, you know, as a very broad trend, do you think that's changed over the years? Do you find that publishers and sellers who own consumer data, customer data, are more willing to license you that data asset, or any thoughts there?
I think that it's starting to evolve, and I think it's starting to evolve where there's more of a real value equation for, you know, the publisher. They can see clear line of sight into, A, I can trust, right, the sharing of my data and the sort of leakage, people stealing my data, right?
They know the leakage is happening.
Yeah, and
it's like just a matter of how much they're willing to stomach, and yeah. they try to mitigate it by limiting the number of widgets they'll carry on the site, and the
right.
number of tags they'll carry.
Right.
And some of it leaks out anyway.
Yeah.
Some of it shows up in the bid stream.
But I guess just to be simple, I don't think it's really changed that mm-hmm. much for the simple reason that you have a couple of very very big players who would say, hey, look, you know, our data is the best. You know, data, and I think in certain cases they're right about having really good data about you know, their users, and they don't really have any reason, right?
When you say a couple, you mean Google and Facebook or Google and Amazon?
I think Amazon is really interesting. They're very early, right?
Yeah.
And certainly Google and Facebook have, you know, fabulous
data. But Google has better data than Facebook, right?
nice try. You gotta grab me after a drink, Zach, for that one.
But just for the audience, he's nodding. Just
right,
kidding.
Right,
just,
right.
Just kidding, John. He's not.
But yeah, no, I mean, I'm just being obviously general, saying, hey, look, I think those guys have great data, And they're good at monetizing it. So their incentives to, you know, kind of push that data out versus allowing people to come in to kind of to their living room and play with the data just isn't there. And then I think you have everybody else who I think, you know, feels like they're under a ton of pressure. Data can be much more scarce. That's really kind of valuable to the marketer. And so the movement of that data, right, out of their kind of direct control is a nervous enterprise, mm-hmm. right? And so I just don't think you see much of it. Do I think that there is opportunity where there are safe havens, so to speak, right, where that data can be brought together with advertiser data, right, at a granular grain,
yeah.
right? And where it could be used for analytics and insights that's sort of safe for everybody, including the publisher's needs. And the publisher can enjoy higher yield, right, higher rates for their media. I mean, I could certainly draw on a whiteboard for you how I think, you know, that would work. And I think that
right.
makes a ton of sense.
Well, so many publishers that have really great data have audience extension that they do mm-hmm. around that as a way of activating it off, you know, beyond their websites.
Yeah. Yeah.
And is that something you guys do a lot of, or is it just, does it reintroduce too many quality issues? I realize I'm getting into media and away from data with that question, but.
I think that in certain cases that is valuable, but I don't think the market momentum is behind that.
Right? Right.
I think the market momentum is, the pendulum is swinging, you know, less or further away from things that are multiple degrees of separation, right? From the advertiser's direct line of sight into, I know who this audience is, and I know the environment in which my my ad was served, and so I think a lot of the, you know, kind of publisher audience extension pieces in many cases, are things that publishers spend a lot of time and money on, but I don't think actually yield that much monetary value for them.
Okay. Back to the walled gardens and their data assets. When Google does something like take their search asset, their search data asset, and release that into the YouTube environment,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
like how big a deal is that? Does it make your eyes pop?
I think it's whether they pop out or not. I mean, I think it's a really significant move, actually. And I think I'm a believer that search intent data connected to other data. Is one of the unquestionably one of the most powerful signals that exists anywhere in the ecosystem. And so I think the idea that now you can buy against those signals in a premium environment like YouTube against audiences, I think is a phenomenal innovation. I mean, I think it's very early days. They just made those announcements, but I think people are going to see real lift. From that product.
Okay, terrific. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about client data. Specifically the success that large marketers are having in prying loose their own data from within their organizations in a way that their marketing teams can activate it on platforms like M1.
Mm-hmm.
There's issues with data fragmentation, data normalization, and I'm not a data scientist or an expert on these things,
yeah.
but I do know that most global marketers are trying to get a handle on this.
Yep.
I'd be curious to hear your assessment of sort of how far marketers have come in activating the data they own.
Yeah, I guess my simple reaction would be is, you know, relative to 5 or 7 years ago, I think they've gone a long way, but have covered very little of the sort of total yardage, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is sort of required. Meaning, I think you see a much smarter marketer, right, today around kind of issues around data and how to manage that data. Much smarter around the technologies that are used. But you know, the brutal truth is, if you go to the Fortune 100. And you gave a report card to every one of those around, like, have you really brought together a single view of that customer in a way that's usable for omnichannel marketing? Yeah, there wouldn't be a lot of A's on those report cards. So I think the market still has a long way to go, and I think the you know, these the frustration level around being able to bring that kind of data relevant to this conversation directly into media, right? So the leap between the enterprise data warehouse and the MSP, you know, hosted database and the 18 different marts, right, where transactional data may exist, and being able to leverage that in media, right, is still, you know, very nascent.
What's the breakdown there? Is it because you need a complete alignment of the organization from the CEO down? Because obviously you have chief privacy officers, you have chief technology or chief information officers,
yeah,
who are all potentially bottlenecks,
yep,
and not to mention lawyers, and regional kind of issues. It's to the point where, like, maybe you could overcome one of these hurdles.
Yeah.
But if you've got two, I'm just guessing here, speculating.
The answers to this challenge are not surprising, right? They come in sort of two big areas. One is organizational incentives,
mm-hmm,
and sort of alignment are rarely sort of aligned in the right way. And then number two, it's an education problem,
mm-hmm,
right? So the concept around leveraging the full force of your kind of enterprise consumer data, developing advanced segmentation and predictive models, right, that have been trained and tuned, for example, I'll stick with the media example, right, to be for use in big media applications where, you know, tens or hundreds of millions of dollars gets kind of spent against that data, requires, you know, people to speak multiple languages, right, and to understand how those things would get applied. And I think the technology ecosystem, as much money is sort of spent, you know, in that marketplace, does very little to really facilitate all this, right? Mm-hmm. I think you still have an organizational issue. I think you have a knowledge issue, like knowing how you'd apply that data to something like media. And actually, I added a third, which is I actually think the technology ecosystem really in media hasn't really been built to leverage that data.
Okay. All right. Great. Great answer. And let me ask one more on data, which is that when it comes to offline conversion or sales data, the sort of thing that Nielsen Catalina Services and Datalogix are peddling and others, that's been sort of an interesting and important development in the digital advertising ecosystem, with Facebook specifically sort of kicking off a scaled up
mm-hmm
measurement system around those partners. Datalogix specifically. But I'm curious if you feel you have the access that you need, and can you get it fast enough,
yeah,
to those types of data sources to help validate media spend?
You're asking us specifically, or
yeah,
or
sure,
just one? Us specifically, yeah.
Yeah.
So the answer there is yes. And, mm-hmm, you know, I think the reason for that is because we are born, you know, of the data marketplace. So we are a data business, and we do business with all of the sources of all of that,
mm-hmm,
third party data. So whether it's information, you know, around automotive, you know, retail, consumer goods, you know, we've had commercial relationships with all of the providers of that kind of data since long before there were applications like, you know, Facebook, right, for measuring online interactions. So we have direct access to that data already to be able to do the kind of measurement that those companies do. And by the way, I think what Datalogix does, for example, in providing as a third-party service, you know, something like that, I think is very valuable to the ecosystem. But again, you know, we're now attached to, you know, directly as a business to very big clients where, you know, we are their trusted advisor. We being the network, right,
mm-hmm,
are their trusted advisor, right, both from a planning and activation perspective. So that data doesn't need to be as sort of arm's length, right?
Okay.
And doesn't need to be behind a publisher wall per se, for these guys to get an understanding of, hey, look, I spent $100 million across this dozen, you know, publishers. And since I don't own the cash registers, right, at the grocery store, I want to know what those outcomes were. I think in that situation, advertiser can be very much closer, right, to the data and ask a lot more bespoke and sophisticated questions versus buying it as this kind of a flat, kind of one-size-fits-all product.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Last question for you on the in-house marketing trend. Mm. Actually, I guess it's a two-part question. First one is very short. Do you at M1 serve any marketers like directly without going through a network agency?
Yeah. The answer is we do not right now, and it's not our plan to.
Seems like you could though.
But yeah, but you know, I'm wearing, you know, my Merkel hat, you know, mm-hmm. right now. We have you know, lots of very big clients that spend a lot of money in this, you know, world, in media and programmatic, who do things internally. And so under the right set of conditions, I wouldn't rule anything out.
Okay. And the last question is just what changes do you see in the in-housing trend? It was kind of a big deal 3 years ago, but I honestly think that it hasn't been as quick to arrive.
Yeah.
I think as some expected.
Right. Yeah. I think it makes great reading, right? That topic, right? And in some intuitive sense, you just look at the environment, you know, with some of the, you know, trust issues people have had with you know, the agency world, you'd think it just makes all the sense in the world in some ways. And like you, I'm in the camp that just says it's, I don't want to say much ado about nothing, but I think it's a trend that has its limits.
Much ado about very little.
Much ado about very little because there's a reason the ecosystem exists the way that it does, right? And super specialist capabilities like programmatic, let's face it, still absolutely is. Mm-hmm. And one that changes incredibly quickly, right? Is just a very hard, you know, client egos, you know, set aside, very hard thing to manage internally and stay modern with. My personal experience, I won't, of course, name names with clients who've gone through this, and we've watched them, and I've now seen it, you know, 3-4 years plus into its arc, you know, are very much swinging around to the idea that, boy, it is very challenging, right, to sort of keep up on all this, mm-hmm. right, while we're trying to keep the lights turned on, as it turns out. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, John, this whole header bidding thing, you know, seems like it's kind of a big deal. But it, very hard to get around to really understanding and exploiting what that opportunity is when you have to manage everything in-house.
You're real busy and there aren't as many shared resources and not as much networking with your buddies.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason. This is my opinion only, which is, you know, there's a reason for clients owning sort of the marketing strategy and being able to plug into uber specialist, highly platform-driven practices that still at the moment are very hard to replicate internally. I think, you know, programmatic may reach the point where it's more like search, right? Where things like that could be more realistic-ish, you know, mm-hmm. to kind of manage internally. But we're not there yet.
Right. But we can probably agree that there are fewer marketers today just outsourcing their advertising wholesale.
Yes.
I mean, there's more marketers holding technology contracts. Yes. There's more marketers that want to make sure they know exactly how their data is being leveraged. And
yes, I think so. that if you abstract it to that particular point,
yeah,
which I think really is the salient one. I think that is a big trend,
right?
Mm-hmm. Which is, it's really only in the middle market that I see, you know, advertisers that are just kind of like, look, I just don't have time, right? Mm-hmm. Or kind of the capacity or scale to deal with this thing. Whereas the amount of things around making decisions about data analytics and the tech that you do see happening directly with clients is much more pronounced, I would say, than even 2 or 3 years ago.
All right. Good stuff. John Lee, thank you so much for coming into the studio.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
All right, and to the listener, thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of AdExchanger Talks. Keep listening, please. Leave us a review. Subscribe if you haven't. Thank you.
Recorded at the studios of Bigfoot Music and Sound in New York City.